2 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 1. For as touching the ministering to the saints, it is superfluous for me to write to you, for I know the forwardness of your mind, for which I boast of you to them of Macedonia, that Achaia was ready a year ago, and your zeal hath provoked very many. Yet I have sent the brethren, lest our boasting of you should be in vain, in this behalf, that as I said, you may be ready. Lest haply, if they of Macedonia come with me and find you unprepared, we should be ashamed in this same confident boasting. Therefore I thought it necessary to exhort the brethren that they would go before unto you, and make up beforehand your bounty, whereof ye had noticed before that the same might be ready as a matter of bounty, and not as of covetousness. But this I say, we'll hold there. Let's just get the meaning here. It's not a very complicated thing. He's saying, touching is concerning. Touching is different. I want to touch on this matter, you know. The ministering of the saints. You know, this idea of ministering, you know, he's talking about taking care of their needs, their basic needs. You know, household servants, and I think that's the idea of the behind this word, diakonos, which where we get our word deacon from. You know, they look about the mundane things, but that are so important. Food and clothing, but also the words are used in the sense of, you know, the ministering of the saints, and the ministry of, you know, the ministering of righteousness. It's the same concept. Well, the basic things you need for righteousness. The basic things the saints require. You know, however it's used, it has that idea of tending to those most basic needs in whatever context. Not just the physical, also the spiritual. He's saying it is, you know, I know I don't need to write to you about the whole ministering aspect. He's saying, I know you have a forward mind to take care of the things that are necessary. And he is speaking of things that are, you know, that need to be bought with money. Where he's not, you know, he's talking about, you know, the poor and the destitute among the saints need to be taken care of. You know, and they had abundance, so they were very forward to help the needy. And he said, I don't need to talk to you about how important it is to help the needy, how important it is to look after your brethren, the saints. And that's not what he's talking about. He's not talking about the actual need. I know you have a very forward mind. In fact, you were so forward that I made a boast to those of Macedonia that Achaia, which is Greece, and Corinth was in Greece, you know, they were ready a year ago. You know, he's saying, and your zeal has provoked many. Meaning, he told them how zealous they were, and they said, well, we won't be outdone by the Greeks. And I think today, I think the Macedonians and Greeks, there's always a sort of you know, the Greeks in the ancient times, and I don't know about today, but perhaps they do, but they looked at Macedonia as sort of the barbarous cousins. You know, they were a little backwards, kind of like the way a lot of people look at the South. They look at them as being sort of backwards, and it's not, you know, years ago there was some truth in that, you know. But a lot has changed, right? But the Greeks looked at them the same way. They looked down at the Macedonians. They, you know, and so the Macedonians had this sort of, you know, they wanted to be considered equal Greeks, and so they would not allow themselves to be outdone by the Corinthians. In Greece, they would not hear of it. So he's saying, I've sent the brethren, I've sent them ahead to, you know, lest our what? So that our boasting wouldn't be in vain. Meaning, I want to make sure when I get there that the Macedonians find you to be as I described you. You know, meaning unready. You know, I don't know if this is the place where he speaks of it, but you know, Paul wanted, in another place, he mentions how, you know, get it ready before I come, meaning the gifts for the saints, so that when I come, we don't have to do gatherings. You know, Paul wanted to just receive whatever he was take to the poor in one, you know, simple transfer, you know, give the bag to whoever was carrying it. They'd chosen a man, we talked about that in the last chapter, you know, just give it over. He didn't want to have to come and deal with that kind of stuff. Like, you know, so when he shows up suddenly, okay, we need to get the gift together for the, you know, you said you were forward, and, you know, to have to you know, when people say, like, let's say someone comes to me and says, Paul, I want to give to your ministry. Right? I said, great, excellent, you know. And then, I don't want to have to go back to them and say, you said you wanted to give to the ministry? It's demeaning. And not that I'm beyond demeaning myself, but not for money. I don't really like to, and you know, it's something I'd rather avoid. And it's like, why should any man of God have to do that? You know, it is becoming for the saints to, whatever is in their heart to do it with diligence, without having to be told. That's why, you know, why do you think when these guys on television ask for money, why do you think it's so obviously, it's just so degrading to the gospel? And people look on them as degraded. They've been degraded by their own, you know, deed. They are degraded. They are diminished in the eyes of many because of what they do. Now, some very dedicated people listen to that and they, you know, they get right past it, and God bless them, you know. But for many people, it is not, it does not improve the image of the man of God for him to go around asking for money or collecting money for whatever purpose. Even if it's not for him, you know, I need to collect money for the, you know, people who come asking for money for whatever cause. It's a difficult and degrading thing. And, you know, Paul had enough to go and preach the gospel, to stand against all the enemies of truth, and then to also have to go through that was a little much. And he also didn't want to be embarrassed and ashamed for all the boasting he had done. That's what he's saying in verse 4. That, you know, I come and find you not ready, and not going to be ashamed. I was, but oh, the Corinthians, they are ready to give. Man, they were ready a year ago. They are, you know, they are so forward and they are so ready in their mind. And Paul believed it, but then he thought, well, maybe I better send someone along to make sure. Because sometimes it's sometimes it falls on those who know much and who have much gifts, I mean, and knowledge in the Spirit. It calls, you know, we sometimes don't have wealth, but we have to make up for the deficiencies of others and minister to the saints in other ways. I mean, he knows they meant well, but sometimes people's mouth runs a little faster than their actual deeds. And they speak out of the heart something they truly want to do. I truly want to help your ministry. And they're forward to do it. But then, you know, sometimes you have to send a little messenger ahead to remind them of how forward they were. And you will find among the saints that the forwardness does not dissipate. And they're all too glad to have been reminded. But for a man of God, it is a tender issue. Because there's always this, you know, there's always the accusation that comes that you do it for money. In verse 5, Paul had told him, you know, I wanted to send these guys ahead of time to, you know, to prepare the bounty, literally it's eulogia, which is we get our word eulogy or blessing. It is, you know, the blessing they had prepared. You know, as a matter of blessing and not of covetousness, it's because you want to bless, not because someone wants to take. And that's the thing. Here's the thing, what's wrong with prosperity gospel preaching that's out there. They don't preach, give because it is in your heart to do good to those who need it. They preach, give because God is going to give back to you. God wants you to give to this ministry, and I speak as a fool, because by giving to this ministry, He's going to bless you, and my ministry will go forward, and I will preach the message of Christ to other people that they should give to me and be blessed. And we can all be blessed. We can all get saved. We can all have a good, happy life. That's what God wants. God's here to give you prosperity. Look at America. And that is not how you give to lose. You know, when I've given, I definitely try to put in my mind that it is gone. And not that I shall receive again for it. Not because God doesn't repay us or because God is not generous to us. It's just that my heart's expectation is I'm not giving as an investment that I expect a return on. You know, it's like they've got the parable of the talents backwards. I'll give you my talents, God, but I expect a good return. God does. You know, I know the scriptures are flying through people's minds about, oh, I will give, you know, the, how, give me a tenth part and see what I won't do with it, you know. And then I will return it to you again. You know, they use these scriptures to talk about how God's going to pay you back and test me with this and so on and so forth. And be very careful when you think you want to test God. And remember that He made that offer to some specific people in the past. Not necessarily to you. God is generous. But I guarantee you that everyone who gave to those ministries did not get tenfold back. And God is no liar. They are. They may not have gotten anything back. They may have just gave and gave and gave and gave. You know how many stories there are like that? People who just gave away all their money to a prosperity preacher and never got nothing except the prosperity preacher basically lived of them. And that's covetousness. He took the money as a matter of he wanted it. Verse 6. But this I say, he which soweth sparingly shall reap also sparingly, and he which soweth bountifully shall reap also bountifully. Every man according as he proposeth in his heart, so let him give. Not grudgingly or of necessity, for God loveth a cheerful giver. And God is able to make all grace abound towards you, that ye always having all sufficiency in all things, may abound to every good work. As it is written, He hath dispersed abroad, He hath given to the poor, His righteousness remaineth forever. Now he that ministereth seed to the sower, both minister bread for your food, and supply your seed sown, and increase the fruits of your righteousness, being enriched in everything to all bountifulness, which causeth through us thanksgiving to God. For the administration of this service not only supplieth the want of the saints, but is abundant also by many thanksgivings unto God. Whilst by the experiment of this ministration they glorify God for your professed subjection unto the gospel of Christ, and for your liberal distribution unto them and unto all, and by their prayer for you, which long after you for the exceeding grace of God in you. Thanks be to God for His unspeakable gift. Again, there's some verses here. Verse 6, very favored of the prosperity preachers. You want to give more to get more. Right? You sow bountifully, you reap bountifully. But again, he spoke as a matter of bounty, not of covetousness, of generosity rather than constraint. You know, he talks about supplying the want of the saints. He was not talking about those who want, who have nothing. And I tell you, there's many these days, they think they have something and they give, but they really have nothing. They're in debt up to their eyeballs. If you are in debt, you don't have anything. If you go from month to month, you don't have anything. You have debts. You know, let's say a man, he has a family. He's got to feed his children. That's not just him. You know what I mean? I can throw in the money for my food and I can fast. You know? But it's not right for me to cause my children to go hungry. That's irresponsible. As far as they would neglect it, you know, you don't say, oh, well, I don't have to take care of my kids. I need to give a gift to God. That goes back to Korban that Jesus talked about. You know, you don't help people you're required to help because you say, well, I gave it to God. You can't give that which you owe to your little ones and those who you have a responsibility to. You can't even give that which you owe to somebody else, the bank, because it's not even your money. Now, maybe you spend it in your covetousness, but you still got to pay it back. But if out of that, whatever little you can spare is in a bounty to God, because you have nothing to spare. And if you really understood your situation, you'd know you have nothing. You know, a man, like he said to the widow's mite, you know, out of their plenty, they've given little. But she cast in everything she had. You know, that widow, I guess my analogy, male, it's all right for her to go without herself. But all her living would be all for her. Not including, like, let's say if she had a child, she would have fed the child, and what was left she cast into the treasury. Out of her bounty. She gave everything she had. That was a big gift. Just a penny. Well, I say a penny. I don't know exactly how much. The widow's mite was a very small amount of money. I didn't prepare for this to remember exactly how that went or what portion of what it was. But it's based on percentages. A bountiful percentage, and I don't mean, I don't want raw percentage. I don't want you to go looking at tithes and all that nonsense. I'm just talking about out of what is truly yours. You know, he's talking about money to be given to those who have need. But he talks about, you know, multiply your seed sown, increase the fruits of your righteousness. We can prosper in many things. There are many things we can give. Time. You can offer the sacrifice of giving your time to the things of God. That's what a minister does, is they sacrifice their time and their livelihood. They could be working and earning money, but instead they labor in the gospel. You know, look at my Bible studies, they're all free. I'm not selling. And I won't be. No, but it takes a lot of time. And I suppose you sow what you reap. You know, I've sowed a lot of time into the ministry from time to time. I won't say I haven't wasted some time. Sometimes I look back with regret at time I wasted doing things that are unprofitable or just selfish, you know, looking after selfish things. But, you know, if I've sown my time, God has caused me to reap abundantly. I've got lots of free time. Huh. Maybe not so, because much of my time is owed to others, just like my money. But out of what free time I have, I try to give it to the Lord, being very destitute of the other kind of wealth. God does not want to give us to give out of necessity, which means we need to give. It means constraint, meaning we are constrained to give. You must give. or like of a feeling within yourself, I gotta give, because if I don't give, I'll never be blessed. So to him of your love, so to him of your time, of your moments, of your thoughts, of your love. I said love, but love is cannot be underestimated, the value of that. Not grudgingly. You know, literally that means of grief. God doesn't want to cause you grief. He wants you to be joyful in giving. It isn't saying like, well, you know, I know it's going to ruin you to give, but give cheerfully anyways. That's the point. You know, God wants you to be merry about it. The word in Greek, I just say this because it's interesting, it's hilario, hilaros. Like we get hilarious, comes from that, it's a Greek origin. God is able to make all grace abound toward you. And you always having all sufficiency in all things may abound to every good work. Hey, God is able to make all grace abound. Well, then why isn't it all happening? It's a question I could ask. Why don't I have money that I can pay my bills and give? God is able to make it abound towards us. Sometimes it's just a matter of time and patience. The Lord has taught me patience. He taught me patience by making me wait. You know? And now here I wait on the Lord, and I'm more content than I've ever been. You know why? Patience is no good if it is never fulfilled. Meaning this. Let's say you want to wait for the bus. And you want to be patiently waiting for the bus. But let's say the bus never comes. What good is patience to you? You sit there calmly. You wait. And the grass grows under you. And the birds make nests in your hair. No use. You were patient and you're a fool. You waited and nothing came. But those who wait on the Lord are not going to be fools. We don't have to be, you know, when Paul would talk, be patient in all things, it means all things profitable to be patient in. Sometimes we need to use diligence, and diligence is really the opposite of patience. It's to use speed, to be active in pursuing something. Patience needs to have a payoff. I patiently waited for the Lord, and He answered my prayer. That makes you more patient, because you say, aha. Now maybe, I'll tell you what, I didn't wait patiently on the Lord. I was tormented and vexed, but He still came and gave me the answer to my prayer. And that taught me to be patient. I don't need to get tormented and vexed because God will answer my prayer. So that's how you're built up in patience, by sometimes not being very patient and then being ashamed for having been so annoyed in this situation. And therefore, God, you know, builds us up in that. Because patience has to have its reward. Otherwise, it's useless. It's just a useless skill. You know? I mean, you can, like I said, if the bus isn't coming, you could be in, it's nice to not be raging there. You know, waiting like, where's the bus? And getting really flipped out about it. But you're no better off sitting there quietly and just I guess we'll just wait for the bus. And it never comes. You should just get up and leave. Now, that's not being patient, but it's being wise. You know, maybe at some point, right? If you're sitting there waiting for the bus, eventually your patience runs out. And maybe you do not lose your cool, but you get up. You make a phone call, you look around, you find out, oh, the bus got in an accident, or the route changed. Then no bus comes by here anymore. That's what I'm saying is patience is a quality of a man of God. But used with wisdom. And so also when it comes to these things, the reason I started talking about patience, and I didn't think he mentioned it here, but he's talking about sowing seed. And, you know, the farmer who sows seed waits patiently for the produce of his field. That's my point, is that God will abound towards us. He will cause us to reap, but we have to wait patiently for the harvest. You know, to every good work, not just to these good works, but to all the good works of God. He hath dispersed abroad, he hath given to the poor, his righteousness remaineth forever. It's got to be Psalm 112, verse 9. I'm curious about the context of that, because I think Paul had it in mind. Yes. Let me read Psalm 112 in this context. Praise ye the Lord. Blessed is the man that feareth the Lord, that delighteth greatly in his commandments. His seed shall be mighty on the earth. The generation of the upright shall be blessed. Wealth and riches shall be in his house, and his righteousness endureth forever. To the upright there ariseth light in the darkness. He is gracious and full of compassion and righteous. A good man showeth favor and lendeth. He will guide his affairs with discretion. Surely he shall not be moved forever. The righteous shall be in everlasting remembrance. He shall not be afraid of evil tidings. His heart is fixed, trusting in the Lord. His heart is established. He shall not be afraid. Until he see his desire upon his enemies. He hath dispersed. He hath given to the poor. His righteousness endureth forever. It's repeated. His horn shall be exalted with honor. The wicked shall see it and be grieved, and shall gnash with his teeth and melt away. The desire of the wicked shall perish. This is the man who fears God, the man who seeks righteousness and who lives by it. You know, what a, you know, those, you see all the blessing that God shows on those who have faith in him? The fear of the Lord is essentially faith. Believing God does what he does. Believing God is who he is. Knowing God is to fear him. And I'm not afraid that he's going to abandon me or afraid that he's going to do that. I know God as much as I know him, I should say. From what I know of God. The little I know him. I know it is true. He is faithful. He's kind. He has shown his kindness to me. I'm not going to believe he's going to deal harshly with me, because that's how he deals with the wicked. Well, I believe I will be his son. Well, the fear of the Lord is to know that that is how God deals with the wicked. Therefore, he shall not deal that way with me. But there's always a fear that, like, you know what? I am believing on the promises of God for something greater in my life than what has been. But what has been, God could judge me to be wicked. And he could treat me that way. I fear lest a promise being left that I should fail to enter into his rest. I don't want to leave behind any of the promises of God. I want to see every promise that God has made concerning the righteous fulfilled in me. Because that makes me sure of my election. That makes me sure of his fear. In what sense do I mean that? That I'm on the right side of it, you know? I mean, look, you read in Psalm 112, blessed is the man that feareth the Lord. What does he have to fear? God's blessing him. Exactly. How does that all relate to the fear of God? It relates because it is to be on his right side. I know what God can do. I want to be on his right side. He that ministereth seed to the sower, both minister bread for your food, and multiply your seed sown, and increase the fruits of your right. You know, he gives you seed. You know, they give seed to the sower, and also bread. The seed turns into bread, and it turns into more seed, and it multiplies what could be sown again. Increase the fruits of your righteousness. Those are the greatest things we could prosper in. So I don't really look to prosper in a monetary sense as much as I want to prosper in the spirit. Because seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added to you. Now he that hath forsaken this or that and this and that for my sake shall have abundantly more so in the world to come and even in this world. That's from the Lord. And he said, father, mother, sister, brother, houses, land. Right? But it's not like, oh, well, you know, hey, give up your family today and get a new one tomorrow. We be patient. And when I say give up the family, I should wait till I get to the passages where Jesus talks about that. Because again, there's a sort of duality. It's like, well, wait a second. It says we have to take care of our family. Of course, your children. But it means like, let's say your extended family, and they are opposed to you following the truth and, you know, and the Lord. You need to forsake them for his sake. Being enriched in everything to all bountifulness, which causeth through us thanksgiving to God. This goes back to verse 8. You know, God is able to make all grace abound towards you. That, you know, having all sufficiency, you know, all, meaning everything that is required, all the competence, all the satisfaction needed. You know, that you could abound to every good work, being enriched in everything to all bountifulness, which causeth through us thanksgiving. I mean, when we see this bountifulness in you of the spirit and in of wealth too, I want to see people prosper. I'd like to prosper myself. I'm not anxious about it. But when you see it, it causes much thanksgiving. You know, just for the things we've had of God. Recently around here, even in my own family, that we are very thankful. It causes thankfulness to abound. When God changes situations and improves our lot in the spirit. For the administration of the service not only supplieth the want of the saints. It's about the want, the needs of the saints, the needy saints, but it is abundant also by many thanksgiving unto God. Not only does it supply what is needed, but it causes thanksgiving to crop up, not just from those who receive, but also from those, Paul is saying, you know, and this differentiates him from those who receive, because what he receives is a feeling of thanksgiving towards God on behalf of the Corinthians who are able to take care of this need. You know, Paul as a tent maker was not a wealthy man. He could look after his own needs. He worked with his own hands. But he did not have a lot of abundance to give to, you know, poor saints and so on and so forth. He made a living. And, I mean, as far as, you know, if he could supply his own needs, that was enough. You know, I know, it's like if I was a single man, to supply my own needs would be enough, and then to do the ministry. That's it. At least that's the ideal. While by the experiment, as the test of this ministration, they glorify God for your professed subjection. I mean, they've said they, you know, they are under this, you know, to be subject is to be under something by way of authority. They are under this. They need to give. They want to give to the need of the saints, right? And they profess, we are subject to Christ. We want to give to the saints. They are subject to the gospel of Christ. They say we are subject to the gospel of Christ. So, this test, they glorify God Because, yeah, it's just like they say. They are Christians. Liberal distribution unto them. The saints glorify God and to all. They give not only to them, but to all who need. First, to your brethren. Most importantly, now if you see a brother destitute, but also to others, to your neighbors. Basically, that's everyone else. And by their prayer for you, then in turn, the saints pray for those who had given to them. But long after you, they long after them for the exceeding grace of God in you. You know, this longing is of, you know, this good feelings, positive feelings from saints to saints. And for the grace that God gave them to, you know, it is a gift to have it in your heart, cheerfulness, to give away that which is yours. Nobody, you know, people give for different reasons, right? There's reasons people give. A lot of people give because it makes them feel good. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's the way it should be. Cheerful giving. Verse 15. Thanks be unto God for his unspeakable gift. And we had talked about this, that the covetous of man wants to hold on to his money. But God, that he would give it in our hearts, that we should give, is a blessing.